Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks for joining us. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio. Jim Masters here. Thank you for making us a part of your day. We really appreciate that, and we always appreciate our very illustrious guest, Dr. Michael Armour, joining us here once again as we continue our extraordinary and impactful series of conversations, and we hope you've been following along. We encourage you also to go back in the archives and hear previous episodes and extraordinary conversations that will enhance and enlighten, inspire, and also educate various forms of conversation in relation to leadership. For decades, Dr. Mike has been compiling an exceptional leadership record, working in a wealth of fields of endeavor. He is a multidimensional achiever, and he consistently is in demand as an executive coach and speaker, business advisor, trainer focused on management, leadership, cultural transformation, and lots more. He's also a best-selling author in multiple categories. His book, Leadership and the Power of Trust, is extraordinary, and it is a bestseller. He's also, as I mentioned, a dynamic speaker. As an acknowledged expert in the fields of coaching and leadership, Dr. Mike has wise and timely advice that he's been sharing with us at the start of the new year and continuing in the new year. It's all about goals, too, and whether they're personal or managerial in nature. In the first of his three shows, Dr. Mike focused on the traditional New Year's blessing that we gave to each other. And if you didn't hear that episode, it was extraordinary. And that was for wealth and prosperity, things of that nature. And in these subsequent weeks of the series, we're going to be taking a closer look at conflict in the workplace and whether it's positive or negative in nature. And he'll be sharing some of his tactics to diffuse workplace conflict and optimize the work culture. He has been sharing his resources and intuitive thinking on Close Up Radio, and it always is a wonderful opportunity to have Dr. Mike with us to talk more about these extraordinary contributions he's been making. Talking about understanding conflict in the workplace on this episode, let's welcome Dr. Michael Armour back to Close Up Radio for today's episode live. Dr. Mike, thanks much for joining us here on the show. Hope you had a good week since our last conversation, and always a pleasure to continue forward with you.
Well, thank you. It has been an interesting week. As you and I were talking just before we went live, here in Texas, we're having a bit of Dakota weather this week, and so everything is moving at a very slow pace.
That's it. Two-legged and four-legged. Everybody is crawling today, right?
As a matter of fact, we have a flock of geese who live on a pond just behind our house. Our back patio overlooks a golf course, and the pond is one of the water hazards on that golf course. And even the geese are not out today. They're hunkered down.
That's right. Well, in my many years on television and radio, I know that one phrase that you never want to foul up on the air is flock of geese. Because that could create conflict in the workplace if you did do that. And we'd be talking about understanding conflict in the workplace. Within that vein, you've suggested that we devote the episode and the next to the role of leadership in finding solutions to conflict. In the past episodes, we've talked about how polarized our nation really is, which leads to widespread political as well as social conflict. And there are more stories of serious conflict going on in the headlines, as we know. From your experience and many years doing what you do and do so well, how common is conflict in the workplace?
I've never done a scientific study of it. I've never done my own survey of just how common conflict is, but I do get a lot of feedback on that subject because I conduct a number of trainings each year for mid-level and early career managers. At each of those trainings, one of the early questions I ask is, what have been your greatest surprises in your experience as a manager? You had things that you anticipated the job would entail. What are the things that it seems to throw at you constantly that you didn't expect? And the most frequent answer I get is the amount of time I have to spend dealing with conflict. And so just from that anecdotal sampling of opinion, I have to believe that it's more common than we might expect. That's not to say that there aren't healthy corporate cultures around. There are many. But there are tons and tons of organizations where conflict at a low level and sometimes at a very open and confrontive level are part of the managerial setting that leaders have to contend with in their roles.
So is conflict necessarily bad? I mean, that's how we always think about it. Isn't American culture built on the idea that competition is good because it brings out our best? And isn't it inevitable that competition will, of course, lead to conflict?
We're based on the idea that competition is good, not necessarily that conflict is good. Now, in the sphere of competition, there will be conflicting opinions at times as to what should be done, conflicting judgments about how to interpret data or charts or feedback that we've received. But a conflicting set of views is different from interpersonal conflict. I like to use the example of sports, where we have healthy rules of competition, and the competition is intense, and the intensity of that competition brings out the best in both teams. But occasionally, someone steps over the line and either strikes another player or does something else that qualifies for an unsportsmanlike penalty, sometimes an ejection from the game. There's an example of where we, even in sports, recognize that there is a difference between competition and conflict, and that competition brings out our best. Conflict tends to bring out our worst. I noticed this especially in the NFL. Saw it in the game just last night, where there were players on the field on both on the two sides who had in their careers played on teams with people who were on the opposing side tonight. And there were a number of places I noticed that after the play was over and players were walking back to their respective sides of the line of scrimmage, some of those old friends would give a fist bump to one another, even though they were in opposing uniforms tonight, or they would have a friendly chat, probably reminiscing about some old times as they would walk back to their respective huddles. There was intense competition, but there was a respect for one another and a camaraderie with one another that never allowed the competition to cross over into conflict. That boundary is not always carefully enough respected in business settings. And so the competition, if not carefully managed by leaders, can lead to conflict, which is unhealthy.
You know, I noticed that too. And it was refreshing to see that in the game last night. I enjoy that. I look for that, especially in sports or in the business environment, that we're here, we all want to win, we want to give it 110%, but that we respect each other's efforts, and that it isn't the end of the earth. There's so many things in life that are so important, family and all of it, that when you can do it and have a handshake and, you know, congratulate the other, not run away and run off the field, it's just a better experience for everybody, isn't it?
It really is. And what those episodes like the game last night show us is a microcosm of the way this experiment in democracy that we are as a nation was the way it was intended to function. It was to be a government of rules. It was to be a nation of rules. And we set up all kinds of procedures by which the rules would be passed in a fair and equitable way. We set up all kinds of arbitration mechanisms, particularly the courts, that would see that differences of interpretation of the rules were settled in an equitable and fair-handed way. And so long as we compete within the rules, our nation thrives. Part of the problem that is behind issues that you and I have discussed on previous episodes is that we are getting away from that sense of a principled set of rules that are the consensus within which we will compete. And so the competition tends to become unprincipled. And if it becomes, if that unprincipled competition becomes widespread enough, then the whole fabric of what we are as a free enterprise society begins to break down very quickly, because we're now back to a power ethos. And those with the most clout politically or economically or in some other manner end up setting the rules and doing things their own way without regard for or respect for the governing rules. So you're right. It is vitally important.
And nice to see when you do see it happen. What's the leader's role in resolving or reducing conflict?
First of all, not ignoring it. It takes some courage to wade into conflict and try to be a mediator, try to be someone who seeks solutions rather than joining the fray. And I find that as I talk to managers about why they hesitate too long sometimes to deal with conflict, is they are just not drawn to getting into something that has the potential for so many things to go wrong as wading into the middle of a conflict. Now, not all conflict in the corporate world is so intense, but the fact of the matter is we're now to a point where violence has become so common in our society as a way of settling differences that I'm even talking to police officers who are hesitant to pull speeding drivers over because of the number of their friends who have been assaulted, even shot and killed in a routine traffic stop. So when trained people like police are cautious about getting into a confrontation, it's understandable why managers and leaders might hesitate to step into a conflict. And so they tend to ignore it and hope it will go away. Normally it doesn't. Second is to forestall conflict through wise planning, particularly if we're planning major changes. Changes, as you and I talked about in a series of programs some months ago, always involve some loss for someone. Some element of the organization is no longer going to have the access to information it had. It's not going to have the decision-making freedom it had. It's not going to have the resources it had. All change involves positioning the overall organization to be in a better place, hopefully, but it does so at the expense of costing someone something they have right now. It might be losing the opportunity to work along friends that you've been colleagues with for years, and you enjoy associations together, and now they're going to be located somewhere else and you will not. That's a loss. Good leaders look at changes that are coming and put themselves in the position of all the people who will be affected by it, and identifying where those losses will come, and then taking steps to ameliorate those losses, or if they cannot ameliorate them, to go to those parties as part of the announcement of the new change and explain the empathy that I have for you. I understand this is something that may not be what you would have preferred that I do. Here was my rationale for doing what I've done. Let me invite you to get behind it and support it, even though you would prefer that I've made a different decision. Just wise handling of situations by anticipating what's going to happen. Third, establish clear guidelines as to how differences are to be handled so that they don't escalate into conflict, and then keep communicating those guidelines to everyone over and over and over. Another key goal, key step is to be proactive in building a healthy, constructive culture where open communication is maintained, because most conflict is the result of breakdowns in communication somewhere. At least a breakdown in communication is aggravating it if it were not the root cause of it. Fifth, the fact is that some people have toxic personalities, and we have to come to grips with that. And if it's not a toxic personality, it's perhaps a toxic agenda. And there gets to be a point sometimes when we have no choice but to terminate them. That's easier to do in some states than others, that based on the labor laws in that particular state. But no manager or leader can afford to have toxic personalities and agendas running free within the circle of responsibility that that manager or leader has. And it's difficult sometimes to take that step to terminate, but toxic personalities and agendas must be dealt with. We could go on and on with this list, but those are some things that I found are important for managers and leaders to always keep in mind.
That's so very, very important. And when you do come across that toxicity, you do have to deal with it. You do, you know, because it can really spread like wildfire, like a virus, because then other people can become toxic. And then you've really got a lot of issues on your hands, so you got to sort of nip it in the bud and find out what's the underlying cause for the toxicity. Maybe there's something going on in that person's life or whatever, and if it just continues, then, like you said, you do have to take some appropriate actions that protect the others in the workplace as well as the company as a whole, which is so absolutely important. What have you found to be the most common contributors to workplace conflict? Of course, like you just described so eloquently, a toxic person could be one of those things. What are some of the others?
Well, one of the things that I just mentioned is certainly at the top of the list, maybe not number one, but usually number one, and that is breakdowns in communication. People assuming someone meant something they did not mean, people giving directions, either a manager or a supervisor, that are not clearly communicated, and so a party takes an action thinking they are complying with what they've been asked to do, only to find themselves in hot water later because that was not at all what was intended. Those kinds of communication breakdowns are one of the most common contributors. But very similar to what I just said is an ambiguity in roles and responsibilities. Failing to clearly define who has what role and what responsibilities within the organization, so that we don't have the problem of something going undone and everyone shrugging a shoulder and saying, well, it wasn't my job, it wasn't my responsibility, I thought someone else was taking care of it. Or someone having a problem but not knowing who to go to resolve the problem, because roles and responsibilities have not been clearly enough spelled out. And this is an ongoing process, because as projects come through our pipeline, we're continually adjusting roles and responsibilities within the group, and those changes have to be communicated constantly. Another thing is being overworked. Once we're overworked, we're tired, our patience is much more threatened. Our fuse is much shorter. We don't as easily roll with the punches. And many times things are said or actions are taken that are simply the product of the exhaustion that people have from being overworked. One of the real common ones that I run into is the perception that others are failing to carry their share of the load. The rest of us are working ourselves to the bone around here, and look at him. He's sitting over there never helping us take the overload and carry it. He's always late. He's always the last to return the call that you leave, the message that you leave. The perceptions that others do not carry their share of the load stirs up resentment. And once you have resentment, then before long, you're pretty likely to have conflict. One of the really big ones, and this one would be one that rivals the communication breakdowns as perhaps being number one, are personal dispositions. Now, some people would say personality differences. And personality differences can lead to conflict, but I like the word disposition. First of all, we've got an increasing number of people in our organizations who have a victim mentality, and they constantly are looking for a grievance that holds up this image they have of themselves as victims. And so they are quick to identify the way in which someone has not shown them the proper respect or the common courtesy that they deserve, or has actually abused them by taking advantage of them in some way, not necessarily in a physical way, but has taken advantage of them. So I'm a victim. That starts a lot of conflict within the organization. Just a disposition toward combativeness. If you stop and think about what our younger generation has grown up on, video games about combat, every time you turn around, there's a new video game that is sweeping the country that is about combat. And so we are encouraging a whole generation to come into the workforce with this mind of, the way to settle differences is by having a combative, assertive approach to interpersonal relationships. It's compounded by something that Eric Byrne talked about 50 years ago. He was a transactional analysis psychologist who wrote a book called Games People Play. And one of the games he had, I've always loved the name for it, he said, a lot of people like to play the game that's called Let's You and Him Fight. And these are people who just love to stir up trouble between folks. That's one of those toxic personalities we were talking about a while ago. And one of the things I learned early in life is that there are people who enjoy the fight. My learning experience accelerated very quickly when I was in ministry in a church in the San Jose area of California. And one of our families came to me and said, would you be willing to counsel a next-door neighbor of ours, a mother and a daughter who are in pitched conflict, and they need a mediator to get them to agreement because this is very serious. Well, it was very serious. The girl had run away from home so many times and gotten in trouble so many times. The juvenile authorities had been called in and had picked her up so many times that the judge finally told her just a few days before I met with him, you've got to go back home, and you and your mother have to live under the same roof peacefully together. No more of this running away to get away from the conflict. Because if you run away again and we have to pick you up again, we're going to just lock you up until you're an adult. Because you're spending too many of our resources on too frequent a basis. So they were looking for someone to bring them back together. They came to my office. They weren't there 10 minutes before I put them in separate rooms because I was afraid they were going to go to blows right in there in my office. And then I proceeded to do my best job as a shuttle diplomat, running up and down the hall to their respective rooms and saying, okay, if your daughter comes home, what do you expect, Mom? And she gave me a list of things, went to the daughter, are you willing to do these things? And she would say, well, I do this if she will do this and if she will do that. For an hour and a half, I played this shuttle diplomacy until we finally had bartered an agreement. I typed it out. They both signed it. I gave both of them a copy of it, sent them home, and said, I'll see you in a week. They came back a week later. Mom got stopped by some friends on the parking lot, and the daughter came on into my office. And as she sat down, I said, well, how was this week? She said, it was unbelievable. We went the entire week without a single cross word between us. And I said, man, I bet that felt good. And she got a scowl on her face and she said, good. It was terrible. I liked the fighting a whole lot more. I knew at that point this was a lost cause. And sure enough, she was back in juvenile detention very shortly until she was an adult. So what I've learned is that there are some people who just have a disposition to fight, and that has to be realized at times as one of those things that we're going to contend with when we're dealing with workers in the workplace. There will be some of those people like that young lady who will unfortunately be part of your team.
Extraordinary. It's a really important conversation on so many different levels. Really, really is. Would you say workplace conflict simply, you know, is it a variation of the conflict that we encounter all around us, or is the conflict unique in some ways?
There are a lot of commonalities with the conflict that's all around us, but there are a couple of aspects of workplace conflict which really are unique. One is that workplace conflict is often asymmetric. That is, most conflict in general society are two people who are of equal power status going at it. But in the workplace, often it's a difference between someone at one level of the organization and someone at a higher level of the organization. And because of that conflict being asymmetric, the person with the less power often tries to even the score by reverting to some kind of passive-aggressive strategy. And so the conflict is not open. It is subtle because the less powerful person is fighting back with a passive-aggressive set of tactics. And unlike conflict in our daily lives where we can just walk away from it and we may not see that person again for days or weeks or ever, in the workplace, when we're in conflict with someone, we continue to be in proximity to them and interact with them as the work week continues, as the job we're on continues. And so we never can get away from the reminder of the aggravation that we have with that individual.
You know, I can't believe that this has slipped by in a New York minute, this time that we have.
We can come back and continue this next week. I'm looking forward to continuing. You know, you've had some interesting comments and observations.
Yes, because I would love to talk about some of the most common mistakes managers or executives make in dealing with conflict and things of that nature. But for those listening right now who are just mesmerized by this very important conversation, which is so relevant, and I can, you know, myself, I can identify with a lot of these different situations with various people and just the way things are. Best ways people can connect with you as well. I'd also love, just this is just a little bit of an idea, maybe slip it in if we have time with the next one. I wonder if some of this, is, and it's a relevant thing to throw in, is a generational way that people respond to one another as well. Real quick, you can go into a supermarket sometimes and you could just get a blank stare. You don't get welcome, my pleasure, hello. Sometimes it's like the person doesn't even have a pulse and they're in a service industry. A few years back, it was, hi, welcome to the supermarket. How can we help you? You could do a whole half hour just on that.
Well, and you're exactly right. And next week, let's spend some time talking about that because you are onto something. There is a generational component to this. Just as there is a generational component to the basic rules of politeness and courtesy that we grew up having embedded in us, that has gone away in some of the younger generations, and it translates into what you're observing in those places of business and is a challenge for those managers who are trying to build a business built around friendliness and customer responsiveness.
Absolutely. Best ways people can connect with you, Dr. Mike?
Leaderperfect.com for my coaching, consulting, and leadership development work. My keynote speaking is covered at keynotesandmore.com. And my weekly podcast on leadership in a more directive, leadership-oriented way than some of our conversations are is upsizeyourleadership.com.
Perfect. Dr. Mike, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Always a pleasure, and looking forward to the continuation of the conversation on the 22nd of January, and we'll dive right in with lots of great facts and much more information to share with everybody. Thanks for being with us. You have a terrific week, and always a pleasure.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
So did I. I did as well. You take care and be well. Our very special guest, Dr. Michael Armour, joining us here on Close Up Radio. Check out those websites, and he'll be back with me next week, and I thoroughly look forward to that. Always learning something new with Dr. Mike on this series. We thank you for being with us as well. Stay tuned. I'll be back in just a few moments with another incredible guest right here on Close Up Radio Live. Till then, for all of us, enjoy your day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.